if you're innovating, creating, or making a difference.
This show is for you. Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
We're recording different muscles, and the separation is done through positioning the electrodes in the right way. And so if you're not activating the muscle around your eyes, this is not a real smile. And this is pretty easily picked up by the recording system.
When you look into someone's face, is that person's expression revealing his or her true feelings? Dr. Yael Hanayn is the director of Tel Aviv University Center for Nanoscience and Nanotechnology. This is Israel's first such center of its kind, and among their cutting-edge research projects is one Dr. Hanayn presented at the 2016 Ideas Conference in Santa Monica, California. What this is an experiment in which Dr. Hanayn and her assistants use sensors to determine when facial expressions reflect someone's actual emotions. Dr. Hanayn, you just did a great presentation today about facial expression recognition and the technology. How'd you come to develop that?
Well, we started working on the fundamental problem of recording muscles. We weren't initially interested specifically on the face, really trying to resolve the challenge of how to improve the signal that we record through the skin. And as we realized that we have a very powerful tool, we started looking at, you know, the really big problems in this field. And the one that emerged and we found immediately fascinating was the face.
When you did that, what were some of the findings that may have even surprised you as a researcher?
So the big problem in the field of EMG or surface EMGs is really to be able to record with small electrodes and for long term. And this is something that has practically not been possible for a long time. And so we tried to develop an alternative, and we were really surprised with how well it worked. I mean, now it makes perfect sense, but when we just started getting the result, it was a lot better than we imagined it would be.
In the presentation you just gave, you identified 7 basic expressions. Would you tell me about these?
Right. So basically, since the days of Darwin, it has been a scientific debate whether there are universal facial expressions or facial expressions are really diluted by culture. And it was in the late 60s that it became established that there are 7 fundamental universal and innate facial expressions. And this has been, even though there's some debate and still discussions about exactly the number, this is the common wisdom in the scientific community.
Let's see how well I remember. Sadness, disgust, happiness, fear. What am I missing?
Anger. Contempt.
Tell me, please, how this works. Let's suppose that our listeners and I are in your lab and you are showing us an experiment and how this technology is going to work. What do we do?
So what we do, we have electronic stickers, and we apply these stickers to the skin of the face. And the sticker is connected to the computer, which allows us to see exactly what is happening with the muscle activation. So what we do, we ask the volunteers to sit in front of a visual trigger, and then we watch their response to different triggers.
And I'm smiling a real smile right now because I'm remembering what you did to trigger laughter and happiness.
Right. So it's always surprising, and it's always very nice to see that there's certain things that always make all crowds everywhere around the world respond in the same way.
Such as what?
Such as jumping cats, apparently.
Which is what's making me laugh here, because you just had a bunch of audience members laughing as they watch cat videos.
Right. So it's supposed to be the most silly thing in the world, but somehow it has something universal about it. And people have been discussing this, and apparently there are studies in psychology now trying to understand how come so many people in so many different places around the world are just find it so relaxing or enchanting just to watch cats doing pretty much nothing but just watching them.
Why do we like them so much?
So apparently it makes people calmer. I mean, I guess it's a very neutral thing. Not everybody loves cats, clearly, but I think even the cat haters, the dog lovers, eventually, you know, they find some of the scenarios pretty funny. But definitely people that love cats, it's one of the most neutral things to watch. There's nothing threatening. There's nothing. There's no nothing negative about this whole these videos. It's just completely natural.
Tell me the story, please, of your own experience testing this software and technology with the stickers on your face. What happened for you?
Right. So it was very important for me right from the very beginning when we had the technology working to see for myself how it feels and for how long I can tolerate the electronics on my skin. And then, of course, to see the responses as I was watching the different movies. And one of the things that you appreciate very, very quickly is that you're very affected by the environment. So you immediately become aware to the fact that you're being videoed and there's somebody next to me. And so these are all sorts of things that we're trying to remove from the experiment. So to make people forget that there's somebody around them, to make people forget that there's something that is judging them, to make the environment as neutral as possible to allow them to really express what they feel.
How do you do that? How do you make them not self-conscious? Because, you know, a mirror we're going to act differently in front of. So how do you do that with other people around them?
Yeah, so, well, one of the things, at least at the present, is that at some point people just forget. I mean, if the movie is long enough, so at the beginning people are much more aware of what's going on and then they kind of let go. In the future, we will just have to make the environment, the experimentation environment, a lot more neutral. I mean, right now, it's done in a very, very crude environment.
What are the applications to which you foresee using this technology?
So actually, there are quite a lot of them. The two main directions that we're heading right now, one is to collaborate with colleagues in psychology, and they're really interested in finding tools to really be able to objectively characterize the psychological or mental state of individuals. Rather than using questionnaires, the idea is that you let them watch different movies and see whether they're responding in what we have to validate as a normal response, as a healthy response. So if people are not able to mimic other people's smiles, they're not able to find things that most other people find funny, they cannot find joy. Now, all this has to be, of course, quantified and tested very, very carefully, but this is one approach. Another direction of research is to use this technology to identify the early onset of neurodegenerative diseases where facial expressions are becoming hampered. And this is something that we're working right now, trying to understand how we can identify that. And there are quite a lot of different related technologies that we're trying to explore.
What I found really interesting about your presentation, because initially it's like, wow, so people can analyze emotions that easily, but your point was, no, we can't.
It's a little bit more complicated than that, and I think people appreciate that it has to do with the context, it has to do with the fact that there are just even 7 fundamental expressions, when they come into a single expression, it's not very obvious what we're really identifying. And so the idea is that when you actually record from the muscles, you're really getting closer to the fundamental activation that comes from the brain, the real command that is coming from the brain, which is supposed to be the actual representation of the emotion.
If it's Monday and you have a headache and your computer is saying smile, how does it know that it's not a real smile?
Okay, so what we are recording, we're recording different muscles, and the separation is done through positioning the electrodes in the right way. And so if you're not activating the muscle around your eyes, this is not a real smile. And this is pretty easily picked up by the recording system.
I'll have to look for that the next time that I go any place and somebody smiles. It's like, okay, is that real? Is that not real?
It's pretty much all around us.
Now you've got me feeling the muscles around my eyes when I smile or when I really laugh or whatever. That's kind of a neat thing.
Right.
What has been one of your best experiences since you started this research with the facial software?
So I guess the interaction with colleagues in psychology, that was a big revelation, because I never had the opportunity or the occasion to work with a psychologist before. And it was really exciting to see that all of them were on the look for new tools. All of them are trying to develop understanding in completely different fields, but they all shared the common need for new technology. So it was really embracing and a lot of fun to see that people were very eager to test and to really understand what we're doing. And so this was a really overwhelming experience in that regard.
What would you really love your students and your researchers to most get from you about innovation, creativity, and making a difference?
Well, I think the really important thing is to, first of all, to try and to identify big challenges. At least my perspective is always to start from the technology because I'm a technologist myself. And the point is that once you have a tool, a new tool, then you often realize that there are so many opportunities. So there are people, I guess, from the two opposite directions. There are people that know what the market needs and then they look for solutions. And then there are people like me that they try to find solutions, but not necessarily for, you know, a well-identified problem, but a technological problem that has been bugging people. So this has been my approach, and this is where I'm coming from and what I try to give to my students.
Dr. Hanan, thank you for your time today.
Sure, thank you very much.
You and I have been listening to Dr. Yael Hanan, Director of Tel Aviv University Center for Nanoscience and Nanotechnology, which is Israel's pioneering research facility in these fields. You'll find more information on Dr. Hanan's work on her YouTube channel when you go to youtube.com and type in Yael Hanan. I will spell it, Yael Hanan. Yael is spelled Y-A-E-L. Hanan spelled H-A-N-E-I-N. Meanwhile, the 2016 Ideas Conference, which was a gathering of innovators and entrepreneurs from Tel Aviv University, has grown dramatically by 2017. It's now a two-city, multi-week program called Ideas Immersion, and their first event that's open to the public happens on Thursday evening, June 8th, in Los Angeles. That would be their Ideas Immersion Meetup mini-conference, and you'll find more information on it on ideasimmersion.com/events. That's ideasimmersion.com/events. There's a nominal charge for admission to this one. However, they also have a free demo day coming up on Thursday afternoon, the 22nd of June. You'll find information on this one on the events page as well. And check out Ideas Immersion's main webpage for information on their June program in California, which starts June 5th, as well as their upcoming one in August in Chicago. Once again, the website for Ideas Immersion, ideasimmersion.com. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more Over Coffee podcasts, our link is twomaverix.com. That's twomaverix.com. And you can contact us at twomaverix@gmail.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.